The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Rivamy.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about The Sandman.
The Sandman, the Netflix series based on the Neil Gaiman comic, the very famous, beloved one. And yeah, I think maybe the closest comic to film adaptation we've ever really covered.
You think, hey?
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I know you've read the comic. I haven't read the comic, unfortunately, but it does seem like it's fairly loyal from what I've heard and seen online as a man who unfortunately hadn't read it.
That's totally a cool thing. I'm going to really like these perspectives of like a comic book versus non-comic book perspective on the show.
Okay.
We're reviewing the show.
Yeah. And as we always do on the podcast, we're talking about the thing that we saw. We're not really trying to, you know, pound for pound, compare it to what its source material is. We're taking it for the value of the thing that it is.
Yeah, of the Netflix show.
So we're talking about the entirety of the first season of The Sandman today. The first season of what may be more. We'll see how it all plays out. But we're talking about season one, episodes 1 to 10 of The Sandman. As always, whenever we talk about a new TV show or film, we are going to give you a spoiler-free review. So in case you're on the fence about seeing it, or you want a taste of it before you're fully caught up on the season, or whatever your reasons might be, we're going to give you a spoiler-free review. Then, once you hear the theme music, that's when we're going to get into the spoiler-filled section. So let's start with the simple spoiler-free review. Diana, did you like it?
I really, really liked it. It's a borderline love. I think it might like just cross over into love. Like you're just past that line when you get to the border of love. I think it might be just past that. I really, really liked it, and I have a few nitpicky things, and I only would nitpick because it's so close to being perfect to me. Like, this is beautiful, the effects are great, the acting's incredible. It's more art than it is, like, a cohesive story. Like, it is really, like, an anthology kind of more than it is, like, one long story about anything. But I absolutely really, really liked / loved it. It's the first two volumes of the comic. Oh my God, guys, if you liked the comic, this is so comic accurate to the point where I was like, I know what lines will be next. It was very, but like, they changed just enough to make it a show, though, to also make it cohesive. So I had a really great time. I felt like I was watching art. I was moved. I cried. I laughed a little. I was very entertained. Great show. Loved it. Andrew? Did you like it?
I loved it. I think I adore it. I'm head over heels. I love this thing. I think it is near perfect. Everything about it, I think, is flawless. Some of the perfect casting, perfect performances, a great story. I don't think it has the strongest pilot. I don't think episode one is the best way to like really introduce into all of this. But that is my only mild criticism. Other than that, I think it is near perfection. I think maybe my only criticism would be that, like, I don't think it's a Netflix show. I think this is something that really would have benefited from a weekly traditional release model, because I think that there are moments, not even having read the comics, where I can feel a story hard stops and a new storyline begins, a new trade starts. So I can feel starts and stops, and I feel like you wouldn't necessarily feel that on a weekly basis. And it would almost feel more traditional episodic. Like there's a nice little kind of break in between two different storylines. I feel like it would flow a little bit better. So I don't think Netflix was the streamer for it. That's me really stretching for a critique, is that like, I don't think the distribution method was the strongest thing for this show.
That's a pretty far-reaching critique to go.
That is me really getting down in the rabbit hole.
I don't like that I get to watch this perfect show all at once. Yeah. I wanted to stretch it out and have a perfect episode once a week for 10 weeks. Actually, that does sound nice.
It does sound nice. So that's just kind of where I'm at with it. Other than that, I really do think that this is near flawless. It's something I absolutely loved. It made me feel a lot. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. It was incredible performances. I think everyone needs to just rush to see this because it is phenomenal in so many regards. It's phenomenal.
I will completely agree with all that. I also agree that the pilot is not the strongest. It's like very well shot and a lot of it looks really, really good. But in terms of introducing you to what we're about to see,
yeah,
for the rest of the season, it isn't, but it's very true to the comic, but it's very not like, it's too much about the cult and not about Dream.
Yeah, it has the energy of a later episode, which is not, it's not a mess, it's not a terrible pilot, it doesn't do a bunch of things wrong, it just doesn't really get the momentum going properly into what you're about to see. But we can talk more about that as well. But either way, like if you give this minimum two episodes, I think you'll realize what everyone is excited about. Even if the pilot isn't the most representative thing, I think you'll still see like the quality of it in the pilot as well.
Yeah, I would compare this, the closest thing we've seen is Legion to this show.
Strong Legion vibes.
A little bit more cohesive and like easier to understand than Legion, but still just very artistic and gorgeous and just a very poetic story.
Yes.
While still being really cool and badass.
more palatable than Legion, I would say. A little bit like easier to parse. Less like esoteric and strange, still a little bit that, but not as hard to parse as Legion. Definitely more welcoming and inviting to a broader audience, I think.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well,
so we're a high recommend.
We're a high. Can it be spoiled?
If you've read the comics, absolutely, because it is almost a panel for panel adaptation. So
I mean, if you mean if you've read the comics, it cannot. Absolutely not.
It absolutely cannot. If you haven't read the comics. I don't know. It's such a new property. Like, if you haven't read the comics, you wouldn't know anything about Sandman, so I guess. But also, I don't know.
I think it can be spoiled.
I think you've lost the thread. I'm so immersed in two different worlds of Sandman.
Yeah.
It's fucked up my head.
Absolutely. I think you're answering a totally different question. I think it can be spoiled. I think that there are a few really nice surprises and twists and turns along the way. It is not necessarily the most driven by plot twists, but I do think that there is a very nice progression and some nice character beats that you do kind of want to be, you want to experience in the moment. So I think it slightly can be spoiled. It's not the basis of the structure, but it can be spoiled slightly.
Excellent. I think that's a better question for you than next. So thank you for answering. Thank you for answering, Andrew, of the Can It Be Spoiled question.
And as well, before we get into the spoiler-filled section, we want to thank one of our wonderful sponsors of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at ExpressVPN.
I always use ExpressVPN to protect all my data whenever I'm online. Not just like sometimes. You're going to want to protect yourself all the time, you guys, because incognito mode, it's not enough. It doesn't do what you think it does.
Yeah, a lot of the things that you think are enough and you're like, I'm protected, I'm safe, you're not. There are certain things that maybe protect your browser or your history, or you can clear this or that, but there's so many other security problems when it comes to using the web. Like, for example, a lot of your internet service providers can sell your information to ad companies, and things like a VPN, like ExpressVPN, will help you circumvent that. I like that it's so easy and simple to use. It really couldn't be simpler, to the point that sometimes I forget that I've left it on, and it's a good thing I've left it on. But like when I was first trying it out, I'm like, well, maybe I'll turn it on every now and then, you know, when I want to be secretive or hidden, and then I forget to turn it off, and I'm like, oh, it's had no effect on my speed or on my ability to do any of the things that I want to do online. So it is just a fantastic service in that regard.
It's absolutely great. Yeah, it will keep you from getting less targeted ads, and also I love when I get a pop-up that says it can tell where my ISP is, and it's wrong. And I'm like, haha.
Yeah, you don't know where I am.
ExpressVPN has hidden my location from all of you and all of my information. I love that.
And you can use it on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV. So there's no excuse to not be using it. It really does make it simple to keep all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. So protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by Business Insider. Visit our exclusive link at expressvpn.com/TFS, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/TFS. expressvpn.com/TFS. to learn more, and thank you, ExpressVPN, for your support.
Thank you so much, Express.
And now let's get into the spoiler-filled section. Let's talk more about The Sandman.
Oh, Mr. Sandman.
All right, so now we have seen all of The Sandman. We are in the spoiler-filled section, and I'm so glad we loved it. This is so much fun.
It's so nice to have a love, a double love especially, because I feel like the last few weeks we've had a one or each other, and we haven't had a double love in a bit.
It's been a minute since we were fully wooed by a show or movie.
I am wooed. I would watch it again in a second. Like
I'm 100% on board.
Like, I'll just put this on again. I don't care.
Yeah.
And like, I really like that you can just pick any episode, and like, they're some of them are more connected than others, but like, you can't just pop a lot of them on and be like, ooh, little contained storyline for me.
Yeah, like it obviously has a big through line in the sense of like the first half of the season. It does feel like two seasons in two mini arcs, where like the first half of the season is recovering the items of power, and then the second half of the season is all about the vortex, the dream vortex that's gonna destroy everything. But even so, it still feels like episodic in a weird way. Like, you could watch them out of order. It's very like clean, efficient storytelling.
Yeah, like, it doesn't, especially the first half, because it doesn't matter what order he gets the items back in, so you can just watch any of those in any order. You can watch the Death and Immortal Friend episode completely on its own at any time. Yeah, the Rose stuff is maybe more connected, but even that is like,
yeah, that's maybe a little bit more linear.
Yeah, so the volume two stuff is a little bit more like, this is one story about Rose and the Corinthian kind of intertwining.
Sure,
But still, like, yeah, you can just pick your favorites and pop them on easily.
Yeah, so a very comfortable one. And I think because of that, it's like, I know it sets up the story. So like, to start out where the show starts, which is, the pilot episode, the first episode, just isn't the strongest way to open the series. It is this setup episode where we have the Sandman, the King of Dreams, gets captured by a human and spends 100 years imprisoned.
He's under the dome.
He is under the dome, isn't he?
He spends 100 years under the dome.
Under the dome, classic. We all know.
It happens to a lot of people.
We all know under the dome. We all know how slippery it gets under there. So he's accidentally under the dome for 100 years, for a breezy century. And like, it's a good-ish story, but it's weird to have your first episode to be like, here's our lead character. We have a couple of voiceover lines, but he doesn't really say anything or talk. And it kind of gave me the impression, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a series where like, everyone says words around you. You're not actually going to be an engaging character.
Because you're like an endless entity. You're not going to engage with humanity.
Yeah, yeah. And I get that like, he's doing it spitefully, or like, you know, refusing to acknowledge his captors. So there's motivation for it. But your first episode needs to set the tone for what the series is. And what the tone it sets is, this is a nothing character who just doesn't really say anything and is just kind of like around events.
I will agree with this completely. I think the narrating brings it in a little bit more. I will actually say, to me, the lesser part of episode one is actually kind of also one of my least favorite issues of the comic, and what it made me so hard to get into it, is I also don't care about the cult, because every other episode that isn't about Dream, and there are a lot of them, is telling an interesting story. Like the diner episode, Dream's hardly in it, but it's telling an interesting story. All the stuff about Rose and the Corinthian, Dream's hardly there, but like, these stories are very interesting. I'm a serial killer at a serial convention. I'm looking for my brother, and I've just found my grandmother. There's interesting stories. The cult story isn't interesting. There's nothing, like, I don't care that you're trying to raise your son from the dead, or that your other son is now in charge of Dream. Like, literally the only thing that's relevant is that Ethel steals the items of power and runs away.
Yes.
And so this episode could be like 20 minutes shorter because it doesn't tell a fun story. It's just like, this is why he was in prison for 100 years. Alex wouldn't let him go. And I'm like, that's not much of a story.
No, it could be 10 minutes. Because it's not a story. I agree with you. It's not a story. It's just the inciting incident for the first 5 episodes. Mm-hmm. It is just, I had 3 objects stolen from me and now I must go hunt them down. Mm-hmm. And it's like, cool. Like that is a fine inciting incident. And it sets up a premise for what our kind of series of adventures now are going to be. But that's a setup. It's not a story in itself.
Yeah, they didn't find a story within the story of capturing Dream.
I agree.
And I also really, I've hated this from day one. I don't like that Dream is like this endless powerful entity who gets captured accidentally and can't break out for 100 years.
Right.
It makes me think this is a weak sauce man, like, or entity or whatever you are. I'm like, I could break out of a dome in 100 years. It's made of glass. Mm-hmm. Start punching. Like, why can't you get out of here?
Yeah.
It's very unimpressive. These are regular humans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just so underwhelmed by the whole capturing and pretty much a lot of things that go on in episode one.
Well, and I would say that, like, I have no idea who he is as well as a character. So, mm-hmm. like, it is underwhelming in terms of his prowess and power. Like, there's no ability to control the dreams or do anything special. So, like, it is underwhelming to be your lead hero to be accidentally captured in the first one.
Yeah, like if I accidentally captured Thor, people would be like, well, Thor sucks.
Right, right.
you're just a regular human girl who had some glass.
Who had some glass and put him in under the dome, which is a classic. But I think the other thing that also like really poorly serves it is that like I don't know who he is as a character by the end of the episode. I know that he has 3 things that he wants to get back. Mm-hmm. But I don't know who he is. Like he doesn't talk to his captor. But I'm like, okay, so maybe he's a little spiteful, but you know, I've only seen your relationship in terms of your behavior with a captor. And so as the series goes on, and I think there is actually a really nice arc throughout this season of him kind of growing and understanding humanity more than ever. And previously, it seems or is implied that he was just kind of a dickhead king who just reigned over his kingdom but didn't really consider anyone else's opinions or didn't really think much of humanity. And he learns and he grows. But episode one, it's like, I don't know any of these things about him. It's not until he's growing and someone's like, you're growing, that I'm like, oh, so he wasn't like this before.
What was he like before?
Because, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we meet him very briefly when he tries to capture the Corinthian, because that's when he's pulled into the dome.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, he does narrate the whole time he's in the dome, which I think was a good choice of giving us his voice as an audience, at least. But it didn't give us enough of who he was before he changed.
Yes, of his relationships. Like, mm-hmm. his conversations with Lucienne, where she's just like, well, she's like, well, you never listen to my opinions before, and like, I've been running things, and then he's disregarding her, but he has to learn to consider new voices and opinions. I'm like, that's who Dream is as a character. Like, that's who Morbius is. But I don't know that from just a couple lines of voiceover.
No, yeah. I will completely agree. Yeah, so there are some problems with episode one. I will say episode one has a great thing that they completely lose, which is episode one is the only time I think he looks really cool. They made him especially pale under the dome. They have this cool reflection in his eyes in episode one when he's got like close-ups while he's under the dome that actually make him like look ethereal and look otherworldly. And then after he escapes the dome, he like gets like human flesh tones and his eyes are normal and he's just got regular clothes. And he never feels like a huge entity again. Never feels magical again after that?
See, that felt... Okay, magical might be a problem. That actually felt like a conscious decision that I really liked.
Oh, I didn't like it at all. I wanted him to feel more powerful, especially once he escaped.
Because he never felt powerful to me when he was tied up. I agree, it felt magical. Like, the eye color and stuff like that. Like, it did
feel... Incredible paleness.
An incredible paleness. But it felt sickly. It felt like it was, he was like robbed of like the 3 objects of power was almost like being like drained of your blood and not being fed. Like it seems like, and even just physically with the like incredibly sucked in, gaunt and tight cheeks. And then he gets a little bit healthier and more rounded and better skin tone. It's like as he gets these objects back, he becomes whole again.
Ah.
And as he becomes whole again, it is him like returning to health. So I thought it was meant to impose that, like, he was sickly during this time frame.
How interesting. Because, yeah, no, in the comics he is pale always. Like, he's pure white. And he's got these, like, coats that look like the sky, and his eyes are always this, like, sparkly color.
Okay.
So seeing it in episode one and then seeing it disappear was very weird. But I do like your perspective of, like, he's getting healthier and stronger and just looking more mortal, but also, like, healthier.
And then also, too, just, like, associating more with mortality in the human world as well. So, like, he's becoming healthier, and he's also seeing himself more as a mortal. So his natural skin color is coming in more. And also, like, there are things that you just have to do to translate a comic book to a TV show.
Oh, you do. I think you can make a man pale. I think you can make a dude pale.
Now, this is something, not this dude. This dude.
He's really pale in episode one.
He's very pale in episode one. Tom Sturridge. This man has the blackest, coarsest hair of any man. I feel bad for the makeup artist because every scene, he has got – he is visibly a man who has 5 o'clock shadow 1 minute after he shaves.
Oh, I couldn't tell.
And they are pancaking foundation and powder on him in order to hide the jet black roots of his facial hair that are coming in.
Okay.
And, like, I think it works and they've done a good job, but there are moments where I'm like, man, they have a, like, a powder gun that they shoot you with to cover up the jet black stubble you have the minute after you shave.
I'm picturing them coming at him with those, like, derma tools that, like, get the hair out at the root so it doesn't grow back for, like, 2 weeks.
They're lasering or something. Yeah. They got to do something. But
to get that hair back.
He is, and that's just something where it's like, you can't be asking, you can't be getting this man to splash around in a bathtub of foundation every single day. He's not always going to be that gaunt and skinny. So these are adaptations.
I don't mind that the skinniness goes away. Right. Like, it was probably unhealthy to maintain. Mm-hmm. I think I would like him to feel ethereal.
Okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can get behind that. I interpreted something different from it.
That I think is interesting and cool, though, because, like, I also, like, as I said, I don't like that he feels, like, weak a lot. Like, my favorite moments of Dream are, like, there's one point where he, like, has to take a crossroads out to give to the fates, and his giant hand just pulls down, or right after he defeats John and he's really, really big and he's holding John in his hand. I like these moments where you feel like you're in charge of Dreams.
Sure.
So, like, I wanted more moments like that. But but those, there are a few moments like that. I'm like, these are cool, but maybe they're cooler because there weren't any more moments like that. And it was kind of more like special because there's only a few where he's like, I'm the fucking king of dreams. I'm giant. Look how big I am.
Look at me being real big. But I think that there is also this perception of gods, of eternals, of whatever you want to call them. I think they call them eternals in this.
Endless.
Which is, I think, common among a lot of mythology, which is frankly bored by your bullshit and can't be bothered. So I agree with you. He doesn't always feel big and powerful. In the moments he does, he feels incredibly big and powerful. But I think it's because in between, he's just biding time and doesn't really give a fuck.
He's feeding pigeons.
Yeah. And I feel like that is very common portrayal of, like, a godlike entity among different medias as well. To be like someone who's just like, yeah, I'm not going to use my godlike power to smite you, person who's a little mean to me right now. Like, I really, like, am above everything so much that I actually don't care until things get completely out of hand.
Until I get trapped under the dome.
Until you get trapped under the dome.
And then you hate that. I will say, I think we passed over it, but Tom Sturridge is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Like, whether he's pale or not, wow. That voice he's doing for Dream, I mean, that is maybe the magical element, because without that, he would feel just like a regular dude. But, like, that awesome voice he's doing is so, I don't know if that's his normal voice. I've never heard him speak. It's probably a little bit lower than his normal register.
I would imagine it has to be, yeah.
It's incredible. It made him so compelling. I was so drawn in every time he talked. He felt like he was endless. Gorgeous performance.
And the fact that he just knows how to live in that voice, too, because there is variation within it. It doesn't feel put on. It doesn't feel monotone, which it easily could, to be like, this is a voice that I do, and I do it once and only. And like, but he knows how to do like a smirk and a smile and warm it up a little bit sometimes. Like, he has the full range within that voice, which is nice.
Yeah, it's really, really great. Wonderful casting. Oh my God.
But wonderful casting top to bottom. Like, I honestly don't think, like, there's not a single mistake here.
I think there's a mistake.
Really?
I think Rose is very flat and boring.
Ooh, interesting.
I think she is surrounded by incredible actors who are very big, and maybe Rose is supposed to be kind of flat in comparison, but I didn't find that actress did anything with Rose, who was a pretty pivotal character. So, and she's like got rainbow hair, and she's like so friendly, but like she's just nothing. She felt like nothing.
The writing, but it didn't feel like she was written, like she was written to be a plain person surrounded by extraordinary people.
I mean, I just feel like a really good actress could still make that compelling. Like, I didn't care about Rose.
Interesting.
But I cared about everyone around her. I'm like, I love Hal. I love Dolly, who are the same people. Ken and Barbie are interesting. The spider wives are super cool. Like, everyone around her was, I liked her grandmother a lot. She was so sweet and warm and wonderful. And like, I thought Rose just really fell flat as an actress.
Interesting.
Sorry, Rose. But everyone else, everyone else, so 99%, I would say, incredible acting.
The Corinthian.
Oh, my God!
Oh, my God, the Corinthian.
Oh, my God, the Corinthian. Everyone is so thirsty for the Corinthian.
Everyone's thirsty for the Corinthian, and as well they should be. Other than the teeth eyes, he's got it going for him. Corinthian can get it, other than the teeth eyes.
Boyd Holbrook, oh my God.
Holy shit, he does a great job of this character.
And like, just this instant chemistry he has with everyone, like just people he meets for a second, like the guy watching Rose's place, old Ethel, or older Ethel, him and Ethel had this long scene where they're like not quite flirting, but they're like fighting because they're not going to be, they might be enemies and they might not be. It was such a charged scene. It was so charming. Oh my God. So good.
Yeah. Brilliant. I see why everyone wants a piece. He's so charming. So cool. Such a good recurring villain for the season, even though, not necessarily the big bad, but like, the recurring guy, and I think that he really sells the shit out of it.
He really sells it. They actually did some stuff that I really like. This is one of the bigger changes from the comics, which is the Corinthian wasn't really trying to do anything with the Vortex, and he wasn't trying to capture Dream in the comics, but I do like that they added this as a through line, that the Corinthian goes to Burgess, and he tells him how to hold Dream so that Dream won't be able to, like, stop the Corinthian. He goes to Rose, and he's like, maybe I can control the Vortex. So they did find a good way to, I think, make him a season arc villain that was not in the comics. I think that was a really smart, good change that they did that really made the show more cohesive.
I can get up. I kind of forgot that he told Burgess in the first episode how to do it.
So he's kind of just been fucking with Dream, just like tiny bits every here and there. He goes to Ethel and tries to like get Dream's stuff. Mm. She's got that cool amulet, though, so he gets fucked. But cool amulet.
That is a cool amulet. He gets fucked pretty hard on that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the amulet of protection.
Amulet of protection that just makes you explode from the inside out.
Woo! Brutal stuff. Brutal stuff. Lucienne, I think, is absolutely phenomenal as the bookkeeper of that scenario. Like, I really love the warmth and intelligence that she brought to that performance. Like, That was a powerful character for me.
Lucienne was really good. How did you feel about Jenna Coleman as Constantine, whatever we're going to say this episode?
I believe they did Constantine.
They did do Tyne.
Yeah, they did do Tyne.
Because, I mean, this is a British show, so the British say it as Tyne.
Yeah. So they're doing Constantine. I liked her as Joanna Constantine.
I did, too. When she first spoke, when I heard the accent she was doing, I will admit I laughed. And then within three lines, I was like, oh, no, wait, it's perfect.
Yeah.
I really shifted me quickly.
The accent kind of worked. I think the only thing that like she didn't quite sell was like the sadness of John. Like I feel like it felt like she was selling the like the fun parts of John or Joanna Constantine of I'm a fun adventurer and I know magic and look at this bing bang boom. But the like, oh, I lost my daughter. I think it was
just like a kid.
I lost a kid. And I'm incredibly sad and tragic. I'm like, didn't quite sell the sadness. of Constantine, but I did, or Constantine, but I did like the fun, charming aspects of her performance.
I am completely on board. Yeah, the exorcism wedding, very cute and clever, very Constantine. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will agree that the sadness wasn't there, and I think just she got the fun magic parts, but I think they did not want to make her physically messy like Constantine is supposed to be. Constantine is supposed to be like drunk, unshaven, open trench coat. It's a little dirty. And she is like perfectly done up in like a designer trench coat that's belted clothes. And I'm like, have you met John Constantine?
Right.
You can
right.
gender bend John Constantine. I have no problem with that. But you got to have like a Jessica Jones-esque mess of a woman.
Ah, I see what you're saying. That's a good example there of like how to mess it up a little bit.
Yeah, you got to be a little messy. Like if you're having nightmares about a kid you lost to hell, you're going to be drinking. You're not going to have your hair perfectly done.
Yeah.
You're not wearing designer trench coats. Mm. Or if you are, they should be like 5-10 years out of date.
That's a really great observation. I think that's a really strong. I hadn't really put that together, but that is one of the reasons why it doesn't sell that she's a sad, tragic mess.
Because she's like not a mess.
It's very perfectly put together.
Yeah, it felt like they weren't willing to let her be ugly, or not even ugly, but just like not perfectly done up, like her and Lyta.
You know, yeah.
Her and Lyta in the last couple episodes, the girl who has the baby in the dreamscape.
Yeah.
Absolutely would not let her be messy either. Like, she wakes up with that perfect hair and makeup every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Women aren't allowed to be messy in this show in any way.
That's a really interesting observation. There is a subtle sexism there of mm-hmm. not allowing her to show the messier aspects of John. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's not even Jenna's performance that I'm critical of. Maybe it is just the, you know, the wardrobe, the costuming, and the decision of how they present Joanna Constantine as unwilling to present. And even when they show her in the, like, the flashback when she loses this kid, and it's like, it's the punk rock phase of Constantine, which is, like, a pretty consistent thing as well. It is still just a, like, a leather jacket she bought that day.
Yeah,
like,
it's not
the
worn.
Freshest leather jacket I had ever seen. Mm-hmm. So it almost feels like someone, like, cosplaying as a punk.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like Joanna Constantine's a punk. It feels like Joanna Constantine's, like, yeah, cosplaying as a punk.
Yeah, it's surprising how much wardrobe matters. Because, yeah, I think her performance was great. And I liked the writing. It was very Constantine, just having very messy relationships. Like, yeah. I dated this girl for 6 months, and then I just kind of left. Very Constantine. So, yeah, it in writing, completely Constantine, and in performance. But, yeah, the hair and wardrobe is very important.
Wow. Coming in big with some hair and makeup stuff, which I didn't expect.
I often come in with hair and makeup stuff.
That's why
I'm like,
whoa.
Dream needs to be paler. Constantine needs to be messier. I don't have a third thing.
But I am with you. The exorcism wedding, I think, was the best part of Joanna Constantine. Like that was,
she's clever, but she's like, you know, and she knows what she's doing, but she's also like, not going to risk too much. It's just us here.
Yeah, and they're like, you got to pay me. Who do I bill? Like, and yeah, that was, I think, the strength of her performance and the moment, and that was like a really good concentration of that character that really worked for me.
I think we are on an agreement that across the board, great performances, and maybe we disagree about Death was also so good. I'm just going through the cast list and remembering who's in this show now.
Yes, Death was absolutely phenomenal. That might have been my favorite episode as well. Kirby Howell Baptiste, who does a phenomenal job as Death, and was also wonderful in The Good Place as well.
Was she in The Good Place?
She was the Australian character in The Good Place.
Yes. She shows up in season two.
Yes.
The other cheaty love interest.
Correct,
yes.
Yeah.
Different accent.
Different accent. Had an Australian accent in that show, which is, there was one point when she was taking someone, and I think someone asked, like, am I going to The Good Place or whatever? And I'm like, you can't trust her to take you to The Good Place. But phenomenal as Death, and that probably was my favorite episode.
That episode is incredible. It's the most standalone episode. I will say it's the only episode where we really get to know Dream.
I agree. It's the most personality that we get from Dream.
Like, because in the first half, it's him and his sister, like, just talking about their lives and what they've been up to. And the second half is him developing a friendship with the man who doesn't die. Like,
yeah.
It is I would say this, like, you shouldn't open with this episode because it's too weird, but it is really nice to be like, oh, this is who Dream is finally. Like,
yeah.
To get a sense of him. But also just everything in the episode is beautiful. Just this take upon death of, like, her lesson that they serve humanity. Humanity doesn't serve them. And, like, yep. She just wants to help them in the transition and, like, oh my God, so many of the deaths were so upsetting.
So, like, just a real emotional roller coaster, ripping your heart out every 3 minutes.
The guy who just wanted to tell his wife his cell phone code
right.
was, like, the smallest thing.
Because he had their flight information on it or whatever.
It's like his first thought was his wife after he died. And, like, it just is gutting. Just like, no, I can't die. How's she going to get home?
Yeah.
It's really beautiful, quick stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful, quick little stories. And the Eternal Man story really connected who Death was as a character for me. I actually think maybe they could have opened with that as a story, because that was one where I'm like, oh, you were a dick.
Mm-hmm.
You now I like this was the one where I'm like, oh, I know who who Dream is. And who he was and who he has become. And I've seen this progression now as a character. And I love how you're warming up. And I love who you are right now. But I see why you were a problem. And a lot of people don't like you or are trepidatious around you. Like, I understand a lot of your character from this relationship with the Immortal Man.
Yeah, he was so arrogant. He was like, I'm sure humans don't want to live for 100 years. Humanity is awful. And then just this guy proving him wrong and meeting him every 100 years and developing a friendship and kind of opening him up and making him realize he is lonely and that he does need connections. There's also, it's not as, it's mildly in the show, but in the comic there's also a really nice storyline there of whenever they go to the pub, the people around them are kind of having the same conversations, but like just different every 100 years. Like, it's taxes. It's the king is sucks.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
And just like, or weather. And it's just the fact that like humanity is very cyclical and like nothing changes, but in a kind of interesting way.
Right. Yeah.
We will always do what we do.
We're all just hanging out in the pub talking shit.
Yeah. Yeah. We will always do that.
Which does bring me to when Joanna Constantine's grandmother or relative.
Great-grandmother.
Great-grandmother, yeah. Maybe. When that original Constantine is like, I've found you. I found you two. There were rumors that two people would meet here every 100 years. I'm like, how? How were there rumors of that? Other than these two, no human being would be alive to have seen them meet. Also, at this point in the story, they've only met 3 times.
Mm. Oh, was it only that many times?
Or a very few amount. Because
there's only so many 100 years. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm like, You do not get noticed. No, no, absolutely there are no rumors of 3 people who look the same meeting here every 100 years, because how would anyone notice that? That makes no sense. Like, if we picked a bar in our neighborhood that we went to every week, we would need, like, we were like, we're going to go there every Tuesday. We need more than 3 Tuesdays for them to notice that we're there every week. Like, that's not even enough to weekly notice that the same 2 customers have been in your pub.
That's a great point, because also everyone who died who saw them, so it's not even like someone can track that they haven't aged or anything.
Mm.
It's like, no, everyone's dead who saw them. I will say this is a thing I never questioned in the comic, because Dream looked so weird in the comic. I was just picturing the bartenders were like, that weird guy's here. I heard 100 years ago the weird guy was here. Like, the guy whose like skin is way too pale and his eyes look like stars.
Right. I'm going to draw a photo and hand it down to my grandchildren.
But that's a great point. Yeah, there was.
No, they did not.
No. Yeah, that would only make sense if like someone was tracking the Immortal Man and they were like, has this guy died? And like they noticed that he was like playing his own sons or whatever. It doesn't make sense of like, we noticed there's 2 immortals who meet every 100 years.
Yeah,
that's too long.
No, no good.
It's too long, period. All right, I get you. I'm behind you.
I like the Immortal Man having one messy century.
Yeah.
To be like, I got too cozy. I stayed in one place too long. I fucked up. Like,
they thought I was a witch. No.
Yeah. So I liked that a lot, for sure.
Yeah, even he had growth, which I liked. I think it paralleled dream, because like he had ups and downs. At one point he's a slave trader, and then like the next time we meet him, he's like, you were right, that was a bad idea, I feel really bad about it, I've changed. And Dream has to change as well and admit that he needs connections and friends. It's a great episode of television.
And missing the meeting, like, I was so blind, so I forgot that Dream had been imprisoned for a century. So when it cut to the meeting and he doesn't show up, like, it literally occurred to me in the moment. And I was like, oh, no, you're missing. Like, I was crestfallen because I was just so invested in the moment-to-moment of that story. I did not really think about what was about to occur.
Oh, wow. You don't normally get sideswiped by a storyline.
I don't, but I was just so into every moment of it. I was so invested. So yeah, that was hands down my favorite episode. I was 100% on board for that.
Now, I have a weird nitpicky thing I think about, kind of just the idea of the show. Let me throw this out you. Do you think hopes are dreams? Because Dream keeps insisting that like he is in charge of people's dreams, and like he's in charge of literal like when you're asleep dreams. But he also seems to imply he's in charge of like the things you want in your lives and
daydreams.
Your ambition.
Daydreams. Yeah, he implies daydreams.
But
a few
he also
times.
Constantly says, I'm only in charge of you when you're asleep. So I don't think he's in charge of imagination and daydreams and hopes. And I think he keeps implying he is. And I don't think he is.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's the canonization of how it all works. I don't know if it's necessarily like ironed out or like completely implied, but or what the implication that I get, what I understood of it is that obviously he is in charge of dreams. You are asleep, you imagine a world that is a dream.
Absolutely.
He's in charge of that. No questions. No questions. I also get when he's talking about like daydreams and hopes, I think that the implication is he's not in charge of that. He's not directly ruling or doing that. But I think it is without night dreams, without dreams, like that empowers daydreams and hopes are throughout the day. So I think
kind of like a residue.
Yeah, yeah. There is like the dream world is the fuel that fuels whatever it is that you have going throughout the day.
Okay, because like
I thought.
Because in my dreams, I'm like, I'm a mermaid who punches things. But in my real life, I'm like, I'd like to write a book. Like, they're very different to me.
They are very – maybe he's got subcontractors or like a micro – like, you know, there's other management teams that were in the dream world or whatever.
Just like lower Lucians.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because now, there's also like desire. And I feel like desire is more connected to my daydreams than dream would be.
I see what you're saying there. That could be a relation there. Now, my big lore question would be, so for that century he was locked up, like they have this whole thing about like the sleepy sickness. So a bunch of people like go to sleep, never wake up and die, I guess. Like a million people died, it said. So a bunch of people went to sleep and never woke up. But then for that century, were people still having dreams or no dreams?
They were having dreams because the dreamscape still existed,
yeah.
But like people weren't sleeping well is the impression I get.
It was just bland and shitty dreams.
Well, just like no new dreams were being made because he's constantly making new dreams and like updating them. So I guess it was like probably some real old shit. Like there's no dreams about televisions, dreams about cars.
Okay.
Would be my guess. You're getting like 1917 dreams for 100 years.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. A lot of wooden boats. Yeah.
But yeah, because when we get back to the dreamscape, like there's a few dreams still there, but it's crumbling. So like you can still dream, but like shelves are getting empty is the impression I got.
All right. Yeah. Like Cain and Abel are the only two hanging around in the dreamscape. Yeah. I don't know if they are dreams or they just live there, but...
Yeah, that I'm unclear about. I don't know if that's just the dream version of Cain and Abel and like, or if they got turned into dreams or if they've always been a story and Cain and Abel weren't real, which kind of makes the most sense.
Ooh, that does make the most sense. That's a really good breakdown of that.
That they were never real. They were just in a dream.
I like where your head's at.
Actually,
there.
I just came to me and I think that's actually probably the proper interpretation of Cain and Abel.
Huh. Okay. I like that. But yeah, there are some lore questions and implications.
There would
but
be,
for the most part,
big,
it works.
It's a big world.
Yeah. I mean, here's the
So we obviously love this show, which is why we're just goofing. But here, the other thing that kills me. So the three objects of power that he has to get back, it's the sand, mm-hmm. and he gets the sand back. And then he uses his sand. You know, he's using sand throughout the series. The gem, the dream gem, the mm-hmm. stone, whatever you want to call it. And then he goes to get it back and it's destroyed, but he absorbs its power. So now he doesn't need to wear the gem and he's just absorbed the power. So he's still kind of using the gem, but he has the power built into him. His helm, the big fucking gas mask thing.
Yeah.
He's like, I need to get that back too. And he gets it back and he's like, sweet. And then just doesn't put it on or use it in any regard. Like, it is just because obviously it's a TV show and they're like, well, you need to see an actor's face. That's how actors mm-hmm. act. And we can't just have him in this helm the whole time. But you had a written in excuse to destroy one of the things. And you didn't destroy the thing that covers your actor's face.
I see what you're saying. I will defend the helm.
Okay.
Because the helm is for battle. Mm-hmm. So he wears the helm when he goes to fight the Corinthian in the beginning, which is why he had the helm on when he was captured.
Okay.
He does wear the helm when he fights John, the guy with the ruby.
Sure.
It's weird that he doesn't wear the helm when he fights the Corinthian again.
Yeah, or when he fights, well, I guess I was going to say when he fights Lucifer.
That was to get the helm back.
That was to get the helm.
Yeah. So he doesn't have that many battles after getting the helm back.
Okay.
So the helm is for battle.
Okay.
So I'm actually okay with it. He should have had it when he fought the Corinthian the second time, but he did wear it into battle twice.
Gotcha.
In the show.
Understood. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can get on board with
but
this then.
But I also, exactly like what you said, we got to show this guy his cool face.
We got to show this guy's cool face.
Thomas Sturgis and his big cheekbones and his...
But you got three things. Bag of sand, necklace, and giant gas mask.
Now you would think that
If you're going to destroy one, destroy the bag.
You would think that the makeup department, who could not get this man's beard down, would have been like, can he wear the helm today?
Can he wear that, please?
We can't get the beard down.
I can hear his facial hair growing. It is insane how strong his facial hair is.
It's the Santa Claus?
Yeah. Shoots
right back out.
They're like, we got to fix it in post. We don't know.
We can't get rid of that helm. We might need it any episode now.
It's
an emergency helm.
So we might need to bust that out in any given moment. I think another thing that I enjoyed was Patton Oswalt as Matthew.
Ooh, this one's a tough one for me. I think Patton Oswalt did a really good job, and I don't know if I liked his casting.
Okay.
Because to me, he added a very comedic, cartoony tone to some very artistic, like, darker things. I think mostly I didn't like that he was in hell during the hell match.
Okay.
I actually think he really worked with Rose and stuff. So the second half of Matthew and like him just being like a little peppier and a little bit more cheerful and cartoony really worked. But like hell is such like a serious like, oh fuck, we're in hell and it's dark and it's cool. And then it's just like, hey, no, you're a dream. You can't die. I didn't like that element added to hell. He's not there in the comic. It made sense. It's like to have someone to explain what's happening to add Matthew there.
Right.
But yeah, so I think Patton did a good job. I didn't like some of the things that his character was part of.
I understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think I like exactly what you didn't like. I like that he is there to kind of break up, what it is, the tone of what's going on, because, you know, it helps prevent it from becoming a singular thing. And I think that that's very important.
I think so too. And like, just maybe the things I didn't like were like, you know, I complained already before that I didn't think Dream felt powerful enough.
Mm.
And in the hell story, Matthew's not there and Dream just easily gets his helm back. He's like, I can do this. I'm a fucking endless. So like needing a crow to help you win a fight against the devil, I was like, come on, he should be able to just do this on his own.
Okay.
And it's like, it's kind of making it like cartoony and not as like cool and artsy as I think it could be.
Oh.
I'm cool and artsy.
You're always cool and artsy.
But in later episodes, I think in the Rose Vortex storylines especially, I do actually think he adds like a really good pep. He's really good when he's like trying to get Dream and Lucien to like get back together. He's like, you guys gotta stop fighting. That he's very good for those parts.
Yeah.
And like, I love Patton Oswalt.
Patton Oswalt always makes things a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he is just a fun casting. It's always a delight to have Patton around.
Yeah, it's very fun. There's also just a lot of fun lines here. He's like when she thinks the crow is him and he's like, I'm a raven. They're just
common mistake. Yeah.
Classic raven crow problems going on.
I think the other episode that I really want to talk about is the diner episode.
Oh, the diner episode.
24/7, I think is the episode title. But holy shit, that is a wild fucking episode.
That is a wild one. I think it could be shorter, but like it's still like so dark. And
I don't want it to be shorter. I honestly think that like part of what works is how much you have to dedicate to the slow build of this, that it almost becomes ridiculous in its own regard. Like I even said to you as we started watching it, I'm like, are we watching a like a university play? Because it felt very like black box theater of like everyone walking in and be like, hello, here's my back. And it was just one set as well. It felt like I was watching a play. And I'm like, what are we, for the love of God, what are we building to? And as it gets more and more obscene and ridiculous, it was like the long buy-in made it more aggressive when things actually kicked off for me.
Okay. Now this might be another like weird like divergent as like reading the comics, not reading the comics, as I knew exactly where it was going. So I was like, get there a little faster. I don't need these long intros and like kind of feeling like we're in a time loop for a while. Cause then you're like, is it a time loop episode or is it going to be like some kind of other thing going on?
Right. Right.
So I did want to just get into the cool stuff faster. Like I wanted the truth bomb to like hit a little quicker, but you're right that the lead in does like, cause you're going to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
So the lead in does like slowly kind of wear at your soul a little as it just starts picking away at you of like the revelations and what's happening over and over to these people.
And yeah, and a great episode for all of those performers and everything like that. Like I thought that really worked. Just a horrifying episode. A weird mix though, because it's like the whole wish that he has. So he's got the wish gem, John. John's like, I wish for everyone to be honest with one another. So it's just like it's liar, liar, but horror. liar, liar, but make it horror. But the wish gem, like with everyone's like, has to be truthful to one another. It really just makes everyone horny, and I feel like he had to put his finger on the scale to make them violent.
He did do that. It's much clearer in the comic that he is kind of just fucking with them in different ways, and he's not all okay. That into just, like, the truth. He's like, because the truth makes you do this, and then he makes them do this.
Of course, yeah. So I got that impression here.
He is tipping the scale, and he's very unfair, but I do still really like when Dream shows up, and he's like, this is why it's not working. You took away their hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because honesty with hope is very different than honesty without hope.
Right.
Honesty without hope is despair.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like, I think there's a really nice lesson at the end of this when Dream shows up. But yeah, there's definitely a John just being like, you guys definitely want to stab yourself in the eyes. It's like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
That's not a thing I want to do.
I do like that there is like a moment of honesty in this where it's like deep down, all of us are just horny. That's all we are. We're just flesh sacks who are horny as hell for all of the time. And that is our truth.
I can get
behind
that.
And when John sees that, John is just like, oh, everyone's just horny all the time? Oh, come on.
Have you seen a dream, John?
Yeah. And then John.
Dreams are just sex.
And then John has to go up and be like, isn't your truth that you're mad that your wife's horny? And it's like, oh, now I'm going to do a murder. It's like, okay, John, you tilted that one.
Yeah, once we got to horny, I think that was max truth, and then he was like, I'm done with the horny. I think horny was real truth.
And then I think his messed up shit, like all the violent shit, that was him putting his finger on the scale.
I was also worried about the CEO's husband because I'm like, how many of those big burgers did he eat?
I also thought that was going to be part of the horror of that episode.
It wasn't, but it seemed like it was going to be.
Because, yeah, like if he's keep doing this loop and then suddenly now like you've had 9 double deckers and he's just sick and fucked up and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be kind of like a lesson about gluttony probably or like something like that. But
yep.
But also like, geez, you can have a double decker burger every now and then.
Every now and then you can have one. Treat yourself. Have one. I mean, don't have 9 in a time loop and then do a murder. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
But yeah, like this, I don't know if I like, one thing I don't think that I like about this though is the unnecessary need to tie everything together.
What do you mean?
So the fact that like the woman in the diner who was going through the bad breakup or whatever is friends with Rose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, like she calls Rose and it's like, hey, Rose. Well, but then when we get to Rose's story, Rose isn't like, I had a friend who went missing or like my friend turned up dead in a violent diner attack. And then like also like when the other serial killers are planning to like mimic the Corinthians crimes, they're doing it at that diner. And I'm like, this diner's still open?
Was it the same one? I couldn't tell for sure. I'm like, this set looks very similar, but I can't tell if you're the exact same
diner. I'm pretty sure it was the exact same diner. And
they would have closed that diner.
Yeah. I'm like, there's been multiple homicides here. Your employees are dead. Like, So I think there was some shoehorning in of like, everything's connected. And I'm like, but that's not really, I'm not really here for an everything's connected storyline. I don't think it adds much.
No, that was very weird. And that's in the comics and also doesn't make sense in the comics either. It doesn't track in any way. Because Rose drawing the nightmares to her does make sense because she's a vortex.
Of course.
So the Corinthian is drawn to her. Fiddler's Green is drawn to her. The other nightmare is drawn to her brother, like via her. So like the three nightmares being drawn to her who are dreams makes sense. But her just being friends with a woman who got stuck with a guy with a ruby who aren't dreams.
Yeah.
Who cares?
There's nothing.
It was such a weird nothing connection.
Yeah, and you never bring up your missing friend.
No, just a photo of her on the wall for no particular reason.
Yeah, no, it's not much of it's not much of anything in that regard.
Yeah, that was very unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah. Fiddler's Green though. Love Fiddler's Green.
I really
Gilbert.
I love Gilbert. I love Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
I loved the effect when he transformed into Fiddler's Green. It was gorgeous.
Woo!
It looked so good. I remember when the trailer for this show came out and people were like making fun of it. Like they thought it looked bad.
Oh.
I think just because Dream looked like a regular dude mostly.
Okay.
But like, and maybe the effects weren't done and they weren't in the trailer, but like that looked so incredible. Like I was in awe. I was like, this is so gorgeous. It's like the transformation into Fiddler's Green, like all the green just popping out of him.
Transforming into it. And even like as Gilbert, as a human man, was like wonderful and charming and delightful. And the speech that he gives before the transformation of like, we don't give them value. They give us value. Like we're here to serve them. We need to never forget that. And just like, and just Dream being like, Fiddler's Green, I can't stay mad at you. Like that level of like, oh yeah, Fiddler's Green.
Well, I mean, that is a really nice moment for Dream as well of showing his growth because he punishes the nightmare who like was living in Jed's head.
Yeah.
But then he forgives Fiddler's Green and then he like,
has to go back
unpunished.
And yeah, has so to rethink his decision.
He becomes more forgiving because like the old dickhead Dream would have just been like, you're all going to the darkness for forever. You broke my rules.
Yeah.
So really the only person he super punishes is the Corinthian, as he should.
Right.
The Corinthian's been murdering humans.
Yeah. Corinthian's a hard reset.
The Corinthian's a hard, you're out of here, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. But the Corinthian and that woman who was in hell. But that was millennia ago.
Yeah, that's a weird storyline.
Yeah. So that's a strange one. But yeah, he can punish viciously, but this is a good growth of him to be like, I'm going to forgive. But it's also just him being a voice of the audience and being like, Fiddler's Green, you're awesome.
I'm going to be mad at this guy.
Yeah, like it really felt like the positive equivalent of like Fiddler's Green is the Black Noir of this of like,
you're doing great.
Homelander being mad at everyone, being like, not you, Black Noir, you're terrific.
You're doing great.
Yeah, so it really felt strong, that the positive version of that energy for me.
Excellent, yes. I think one of my last things is just as a plot device, I think serial killer convention is awesome.
God, that was fun.
So fun, right? Like just all the different kinds of serial killers. This idea that there were no serial killers until the Corinthian came, which I really like. Like that he's been the inspiration for serial killers because like historically there really haven't been. Mm-hmm. Like even in the real world, like serial killers were like Jack the Ripper was the first one.
And I think the implication is the first time we see the Corinthian, he is Jack the Ripper.
Yeah. So I really love this idea that like he did genuinely inspire all these people. So Dream is right to like take those out of their heads at the end once he kills Corinthian.
Yeah.
So yeah, but also just like so fun, just like the name tags and such a good, fun idea.
And it was tonally the exact right balance of being like dark and bleak, but that wasn't the point of it. Like, I don't even know how to describe what I'm saying, but like there is this feeling where sometimes it's like the false maturity that we've talked about on the podcast, where it's like, this story's mature because we have it has a boob and we say fuck. It's
and
not
we do an assault.
Yeah. It's not trying to be mature for a teenager's perspective of what mature is. So it's not trying to be like, we're gross out tough hyper violence. And it's not trying to like
It's not like gross out horror either.
Yeah.
It really is just like kind of a dark, fun story for adults.
Yeah. It's this perfect in between everything without being too gross or too much of anything at the
same
time.
Yeah. It's not too gory to the point where you're like, this is gore porn. It's not too horrific where you're like, it's too horrifying. It's not too immature where it's like, oh my God, serial killers. Yeah. Just a serial convention.
Yeah. Just a really fun thing and just a great setup for everything too with like, with Jed and the kids being chased by the other serial killer and then, like, the false journalist who then needs to be killed and doing the group killing and the chasing. There's just so much going on.
A reason for the Corinthian to keep leaving because he can just not do his speech. He's like, I'm in the middle of controlling the vortex and maybe taking over the dreaming, but I also really need to go do this speech real quick.
Right.
I got fans. The fact that he must do it.
If you're the guest of honor, a keynote speech is a big thing.
He takes his responsibilities seriously.
You gotta do the keynote speech. And I respect that about the Corinthian.
I like how that he's that petty, though. That he, like, he's about to take over the dreaming, but he's like, gotta do that speech.
Also, shout out to Rose's roommate, who fucks the Corinthian and does not get killed by the Corinthian.
We thought that dude was toast.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only dude who just gets to fuck the Corinthian.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe, like, I don't know. Yeah, he might be the only one who just does it and has sex.
And just had a nice day.
And just had a nice day.
Just had a nice, fun time.
Yeah, and that's nice. Mm-hmm. Good for him, I guess.
Happy for him. I hope he doesn't find out who that guy was.
Oh, boy, yes. I hope Rose doesn't bring up any of the other details about what had happened.
Because Rose is definitely going to come home, and he's going to be like, oh, that guy with the sunglasses was looking for you. I definitely didn't have sex with him. She's going to be like, the guy with the sunglasses very bad.
Oh,
bad,
no. Bad. Yeah, you got to not tell him about that, for sure. But yeah, shout out to that roommate, or friend, or whatever it might
be. Whoever your house sitter was.
Whoever you were wonderful. But yeah, I'm feeling good on the Sandman, unless you got anything else you wanted to bring up.
One last little quick thing that is just a little bit weird, but also not weird. There are so much Justice League background things happening.
Mm.
And I just find that so odd.
Right.
For a show that, the show couldn't get the rights to John Constantine, which is why Joanna's there twice.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think makes perfect sense. That absolutely works fine. But, like, you couldn't get the rights to Constantine. You couldn't get the rights to Etrigan. Etrigan's not in hell, and he is in the comics. But, like, you're allowed to have all these Batman and Flash toys and Static Shock shirts and actual clips from Justice League animated. I don't understand how rights work. I'm so confused.
It exists in this world. All right? We are watching, this is like some real Lightyear shit, all right?
Oh, they're watching
the things that the movie, that we're watching the thing that the things are based on, okay? All right?
Okay, this is Jed's favorite show.
Yes. Yes. So it all makes sense if you look at it from that perspective.
I actually like the meta idea of that. Okay, yeah. It was just very jarring.
Because
it was very slowly introduced. We're like five episodes in when you see a Static Shock shirt. And
sure.
I'm like, was that Static Shock? Is that a Batman toy?
Well, whenever you go to see a DC thing, if you pull back the camera one stage further, you are in the Sandman universe, which is our world.
Now, hear me out, though. That means that in this universe, or that universe, Dream created Batman. That's fun.
Oh, that would be a Batman. Yeah,
he created the idea of Batman, then.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because I assume your creativity comes from your dreams in this world, if your daydreams come from your dreams.
I don't think Dream is filing copyrights or patents or anything like that. I think Dream is just letting that shit
go. He's not looking for copyrights, but he's like, I made that.
That shit's mine.
Thanks for Batman, Dream.
Thank you, Dream.
Appreciate you.
Well, that's going to be it for our episode on the Sandman. But, well, we're going to go in for one final question. We are going to ask the final question of what would you change, where we ask what would you change about this if you could change anything. But before we do ask that final question, we want to thank our other wonderful sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at Quip.
We're going to thank our friends at Quip because good health starts with good habits, and Quip makes it easy to have those habits. They deliver all the oral care essentials you need to care for your mouth right to your door.
Yeah, you gotta take care of your mouth.
Guys, your mouth is so important. Like, your mouth getting damaged is like the reason most people used to die in the medieval times.
The percent of like the like percent of your body to health ratio that the mouth encompasses is kind of wild. Like, I don't think there's anything else in your body that takes up as little real estate, but has as important an effect on everything.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. You got to take care of your mouth bones, which is what I call teeth. And with Quip, they have timed sonic vibrations with 30-second pulses to guide a dentist-recommended 2-minute clean. So you pop it in, choose a quadrant, you'll feel a little change in pulses. Then you move on to the other quadrant. You're going to get an even clean. It's got a lightweight, sleek design, so there's no wires or bulky chargers. And it's got this great little travel cover that doubles as a mirror mount, so you can pop it on the mirror. You've got less clutter, less things just kind of piling up on your countertop, which can things pile up on that old bathroom countertop.
They do. Anything you can move around and be like a little less cluttery, always nice.
Always nice. And it's not just their toothbrush. They also have anti-cavity toothpaste. They have two ways to floss. Their floss string that expands to clean. They have a reusable floss pick as well. They've got refillable gum, refillable mouthwash. Pretty much all of your everything you might need for your oral care routine you can get from them.
Everything you might need. And guys, listen to this. Quip is loved by over 7 million mouths. 7 million. It's a very, very big number of people who use Quips, and you should join that number. We'll make it 7 million 1, 7 million 2.
They'll keep adding.
They will update our copy, and we will get 7 million 2 next time, 7 million 3, and even better, if you get the new smart motor, you can earn rewards for brushing your teeth, a thing you already do. Get that free stuff. Get free products like Target gift cards, free refills. That's cool.
Get on it. So check out Quip. If you go to getquip.com/super, right now you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/super. That's spelled GETQUIP.com/super. Quip, the Good Habits Company. And thank you, Quip, for your support.
Thank you from our teeth bones.
And as well, before we go in for the final question, we'll remind you, as we do every week, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you might get your podcasts. It helps us move up the charts. It helps us find new listeners. It means the world to us. It sincerely is one of the best ways to support the podcast for free.
It helps us, guys. Wherever you're listening, there's probably a way to leave us a 5-star rating. At the very least, there might be a way to leave a review, and we would absolutely love that. It would help us so much. It will only take a second, and leave one for another podcast you like or two. You'll make everybody's day.
Yeah.
You want to make us smile? Leave us a 5-star review, baby.
Yeah, baby. And as well, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do that over on Patreon. Patreon's a monthly subscription service where you can subscribe at whatever you can afford, and you'll get different levels of cool bonuses for doing it. So you can chip in whatever is in your budget, $1 a month. Do not scoff at $1. If you want to chip in $1, those add up and make a world of difference. $1, $5, $10, $20, whatever you have in the budget. And you can cancel or change on any given month. You're not locked into anything. And as well, at the $10 hero level, then you get a bonus episode of this podcast, a Patreon-exclusive episode, just for our hero-level patrons every single month over there.
Every single month. And when you sign up, you get all the old ones. There's so many more episodes of Talking Superheroes waiting for you about a topic we never cover on the regular podcast that has no ads, and you get a fun nickname. Lots going on.
Oh, yeah, you got a wonderful nickname from Diana. You can't forget that. So if it's in the budget, head over to our Patreon page. Check it out. Have a look at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And thank you to all of our current patrons for your support. And thank you to all of our future patrons. If you head over to the page and have a look, we appreciate you even considering.
We appreciate you all.
And now, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
Despite how nicely you explained what you thought about Dream's look changing, I'm going to stand my ground and think that he should be really pale and sparkly and look cool for most of the show. Not like overly cool, but just like a little bit cool always. Just like a little bit ethereal should be happening either in his clothes or his eyes or his very paleness. I really, really think that would like make the show pop a little more. My biggest change is actually I would like Dream to have more of a through line, because there are huge swaths of this where Dream does nothing. And it's like a really good show, but it's called The Sandman. It's about Dream. So my main change is that Dream's going to narrate a lot more. He narrates most of episode one because he's quiet under the dome. He doesn't say anything, so he's narrating the whole story. And I think he can even narrate things he's not part of, because, like, it's his story. He knows everything that happens after the fact. So I think just some dream narration during the diner would actually be like, John was controlling them, but he didn't know what he was going to see or whatever. Like, a little bit of narration during Rose's story, which he knows all about because he knows what the Vortex is. He can see into her dream books. So, yeah, I'm just going to add, like, because we said we didn't really get to know Dream very well until episode like five, which is the episode with Death, and that's a little late. So, yeah, I'm gonna make Dream the constant, permanent narrator of the show, so we can get to know him a little better and have him be more of a presence throughout everything.
Interesting.
That's my big change.
Cool. I could maybe get on board with that. Okay. Yeah, I'm only iffy on that one, but I think I could get on board with it.
All right, I think you can give it a shot. And if you don't like it, it's really easy to take out.
Just
remove that audio track. Mm-hmm. Andrew, what would you change?
For me, my big change would be a little bit more Corinthian.
He rules.
He rules and he's awesome. I would say that, like, the one slight drawback is that I could really tell all momentum ended from one story and then a new series of stories began once we got over to the Rose section. Mm-hmm. And the Corinthian carried over a bit, but, you know, he gets taken out and then the final thing is really, like, about Rose. And Rose is a good character, and, like, that storyline does work, but it doesn't feel like there's a solid season through line. Mm-hmm. It feels like the Corinthian's just kind of a dude hanging around, despite how cool and powerful he is. So I think it needs a little bit more Corinthian, and I also think it very much needs to remove that one scene where Ethel with the protection amulet kills him, and then he goes back into the dreamland, and he's like, oh, I'm here. I'm going to leave again, and just walks out again. I'm like, this is a really weird kind of energy killing area. So I think they kill the energy with the Corinthian a couple of times. Okay. And I would really like to avoid that. Like, I like opening with him, and I like him being around for the Rose stuff, which you tell me wasn't necessarily in the comics. But yeah, I think that, like, the big final fight should be with Corinthian in this.
I can get behind that because he's the through line of the season. Like, as much as the Vortex is kind of a bigger deal, he could be more connected to the Vortex or something, or take Rose's powers or something, and, like, be a big fight where, like, Sandman needs to put the helm back on. He has to have an actual battle.
And at the end, Rose is able to take the Vortex out of her, and her grandmother takes it in order to make that sacrifice. But if she can take the Vortex out, then why not, like, give it to the Corinthian or something like that? Like, that could easily be the thing that kind of builds it up. But him not being the final problem means that he is just someone who had a lot of great scenes and stories throughout this. But I think he needed to have been that one cohesive thing. Because as it is right now, it does feel like two wildly distinct, separate stories occur in this season. Mm-hmm. And I just want to tie that all together a little bit more.
Okay, yeah. I think I can get behind that as a good show change. It works better in the comics, but, like, as a show, like, there should be a through line of a main villain throughout a season. So I think that's a good TV change.
And I could even do with, like, I mean, obviously it's hard to say what they're going to do for the next season or what happens in continuing comics. But even as well, some of the desire and despair stuff, where, like, desire is the one responsible for Rose becoming the Vortex, because they imply that it's like if Dream killed Rose and Rose is the child of desire, then that would be spilling the blood of within the family, which means that they could go to war with Dream. And I'm like, Just make that the Corinthian, because I'm like, this is all just seeding a problem for next season, and desire is cool, but doesn't do anything this season, and instead just has, like, a thing that doesn't go where they intended it to go. And then Desire's plotline just kind of fizzles.
Yeah. The Corinthian being endless as well, like, timeless because he's a nightmare. Like, he definitely could have just impregnated Unity.
Yeah.
There's no reason he couldn't also just be like, I created a dream child, and that's a Vortex.
Yeah.
And that's what Vortexes are. It's when a dream impregnates a human.
Yeah. So I would have preferred the Corinthian stepping into Desire's role in this. Because Desire's role in this is just a tease for next season. So we can still have them around, but, like, just be a tease for next season.
Or just be the main villain next season and just don't be around this time.
Exactly.
I can buy this.
Yeah, more Corinthian through line. And you want more VO narration.
I want to dream a little better.
Interesting.
Excellent. Look what we've done.
Well, everything's wrapped up in a neat little package. That's going to be it for this week on the podcast. Next week, we're going to be back and we're going to be talking about Prey.
Ooh, Hulu's Prey.
So we'll be talking about that next week. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamey, I-V-I-M-E-Y.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.